Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody. We have landed in 1964. It's like Twilight Zone type of deal. We have our cats behind us. They're sleeping still. We're hoping that they don't get riled up because of Kaylee's hippie-like tendencies. It's 1964. What? She's hippieing out. I know it. No, she's not, everybody. But anyways, 1964, I tell you what do you know, Kaylee? Is there anything you can think, that's it, 1964?
Mod fashion?
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think it started around then.
I think that was starting in the early 60s.
Yeah.
Like early to mid 60s.
Yeah.
Just a time of changes.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. It's the middle of like the roughest decade in the 20th century, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of folks would say. Either that or the 40s.
In terms of like cultural and societal changes, for sure.
Yeah. But what we're looking at is the plate, the food that we've landed in. Oh my gosh. The first one here, it's food for the guys behind us, like behind us anyways, because it's not their type of food. But Supreme, that's right, a brand of Campana, manufactures and sells animal feeds, particularly for zoo animals and exotic pets. It is based out of Kansas and is one of the main suppliers of the St. Louis Zoo.
Oh.
Yeah.
We've been there.
Yeah. But no, Supreme is a company that specializes in making, like, bird food, but then also, like, big cat food and, like, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Supreme, everybody.
All right.
But moving on to human food, guys. We gotta go where the meats are. Arby's.
Oh,
that's
really?
Right. Yeah, Arby's was founded in Boardman, Ohio. These first two, by the way, from Wikipedia. On July 23rd, 1964, by brothers Forrest, from 1922 to 2008, RIP, and Leroy Raffle, owners of a restaurant equipment business who thought there was a market opportunity for a fast food franchise based on a dish other than hamburgers. Kaylee agrees. Like, there's too many burger places.
Well, there, and you listed off like two dozen of them in just 1 year, and it was there's a reason why most of those aren't in business anymore. I mean,
you know,
like you can only have so many places doing one thing.
Yeah. Honestly.
And I do like Arby's.
It doesn't agree with
do
you.
Do I feel like trash after? Right. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
But does it taste good? Yes. And do I love the Jamocha shake? Absolutely.
Oh, Jamocha shake.
And the curly fries, they're up there.
Yeah, they're up there. Yeah. But yeah, they wanted to call their restaurants Big Tex. But that name was already used by an Akron business. Instead, they chose the name Arby's based on the initials RB, the initials of Raffle Brothers.
Oh.
Right?
Huh.
Although often mistaken for roast beef.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's like three different ways you can do Arby's there. That's kind of crazy.
Is that a hat?
It is a hat.
I've never really paid attention, but it's like a gallon hat.
Yeah, it's what do they call it? 10-gallon? Yeah, 10-gallon hat or something like that. But it's supposed to resemble like, just like a Western hat, you know?
Huh.
We got the meats. Like a cattle herder type, you know? Yeah. But the next one here, one of Kaylee's favorite things to eat, Benihana, right?
Well, I've never
been. Never been to it, but teppanyaki, right? So the whole, you know, flat top.
Yes, I do enjoy it.
Yeah.
There's a place we go to here, or we used to. We've only been a couple times. But anyway, they do this, and it's so good.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah. Everybody has fun.
And I want to go to a Benihana.
Right. Yeah. It's always fun with these. Yeah. Not only because they get to show off their skill and they get, but it's very good food.
Yeah, the food is
very
so good.
But yeah, Benihana Incorporated, which is Japanese for safflower, is an American restaurant company. I'm going to blow your mind here in a second, so everybody get ready. It's an American restaurant company founded by Hiroaki Aoki in New York City in 1964 and currently based in Aventura, Florida. It owns or franchises 116 Japanese-influenced restaurants around the world, including its flagship Benihana Teppanyaki brand, as well as the Haru, which is fusion cuisine, and RA sushi restaurants. Benihana introduced the Teppanyaki, colloquially known as hibachi, restaurant concept, which had originated in Japan in the late 1940s to the United States and later to other countries. The company was founded in 1964 on West 56th Street in New York City by 25-year-old Hiroaki Aoki, the father of Steve Aoki and Devin Aoki. Yeah, okay, that is
you
right.
You said the last name, and I was like,
yeah.
Steve Aoki?
Right. Steve Aoki, Aoki, Aoki. So, that's what I remember. I don't know why.
You know what?
Yeah.
You can't get famous anymore just by being you.
No. No.
You have to know someone.
You got
to
know somebody. Yeah.
You have to have money.
Right.
Or both.
You got to have that Benihana money.
You, like, cannot, you know,
yeah.
This American dream BS is over.
Well, hold on. Well, it's over for us, yeah.
Yeah.
Not for Hiroaki.
No. Hiroaki. I'm saying right now.
Yeah, or Hiroaki, I believe. But yeah, so to finish that thought, but yeah, you're right. It's crazy. Steve Aoki.
That's what? Why. Yep, that's why he's famous.
But Aoki, so Hiroaki, a wrestler who had qualified for but did not attend the 1960 Summer Olympics, started the restaurant with $10,000 equivalent to about $87,000 in today's money, earned from driving an ice cream truck in Harlem. The first restaurant, Benihana of Tokyo, was named for the red safflower that was the name for the coffee shop owned by his parents in Tokyo. Hmm. Yeah.
And I was thinking a little bit more about this. It's not that, you know, some people who come from money or know people don't work hard or,
right,
like, have a talent. That's not what I'm trying to say, but they have it a lot easier than someone like me or you who doesn't know anybody in anything.
Yeah.
So
they get to stay in that higher social class.
Yeah.
Even if they go off to do their own thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah,
that they're connected.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. The next one here, Blimpy. Yeah, that's right.
Blimpy?
Yeah, Blimpy still exists.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not. So Blimpy International, doing business as Blimpy, stylized as Blimpy with the lowercase i's, is an American submarine sandwich chain based in Scottsdale, Arizona. It was founded in Hoboken, New Jersey in 1964 by three friends and has since endured three ownership changes. Wow. But anyways, Blimpies, man, it was a big deal in the early 2000s, you know.
Was it out in Missouri?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They all went out of business, but they were popular at the time.
I mean, these aren't out here.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever have been because I've never seen this, but there's a place that's probably like kind of the same, Big Town Hero or, yeah, Big Town Hero.
Big Town Hero. Yeah.
That place had some of the best sandwiches, I think it's out of business or it's like about there.
Another victim to COVID.
Well, I don't know about that. I think it was just because the last time I ate at one was I was a kid.
Yeah.
I love sub sandwiches, honestly.
Yeah. Sub sandwiches are great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, obviously, if we've got sandwiches, we got to go with tacos next. Del Taco.
Oh.
Yeah, restaurants.
Oh.
Yeah. Here you go, Del Taco. It's an American fast food restaurant chain which specializes in American-style Mexican cuisine. See, they put the American style before Mexican.
Yeah, that's a bad sign.
Well, it is. It just means you're not getting authentico, okay? You're getting, you know, a stylized
I
version.
I guess it's kind of like Taco Bell,
right.
too, but...
Right, yeah.
Taco Bell's better.
Yeah. Yeah, as well as American foods, such as burgers, fries, and shakes.
They have shakes?
Yeah.
What?
Del Taco is led by CEO John D. Capasola Jr. and is headquartered in Lake Forest, California. On December 6, 2021, Jack in the Box announced that it was acquiring Del Taco for $12.51 per share. The acquisition was finalized in March of this year, 2022.
It's not good, right? Like, that's pretty low.
I don't know how many shares they have. That's the thing.
I just mean for a dollar amount for a share. Like,
yeah, it's not
pretty
it's
low.
Not, right. I was saying, it's not crazy high.
It's not like Apple or.
Right. Right. Or like Walmart is pretty. Yeah. But the acquisition was finalized this year. Del Taco has approximately 600 locations in 16 U.S. states. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I've eaten there once.
And if I've eaten there once, I
it was
don't
not
remember
memorable.
It. Yeah. If I've eaten there once, I don't remember at all.
I do remember they had like dollar. They had something for 99 cents.
It's probably this
like
little
burrito
like,
or
yeah,
a taco
say,
or
it's probably
something?
This little guy right here. It's,
yeah. Sorry, I stand by Taco Bell's bitter. So
yeah, but anyway, we're moving on to the biggest invention probably in world history, food wise. You know, everybody's
in world
like
history.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's like Benihana and Japanese food, sushi. No. Biggest revolution ever was up in Buffalo with the Buffalo
this
chicken
is not
wing.
The biggest. Stop. This is a lie.
Hey. No one's gonna slander my wings.
I will.
1964, Buffalo Wings debut at Western New York Bar. Teresa Bellissimo, owner of Anchor Bar in Buffalo, New York, invented Buffalo Wings in 1964. Now a Super Bowl staple, the wings were created on a whim after the bar received a delivery of chicken wings instead of the necks they had ordered.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't agree with the celery. I understand
right.
you're trying to like.
Right.
Was it like.
It's a veggie.
Cool down
right.
your mouth or whatever, right. but I don't agree with celery. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Put something else on there and maybe I'll eat it, but.
Yeah.
It's not the best thing in world history for food.
I might have fibbed a little there. I might
yeah,
have.
Yeah, I think you over exaggerated like 1,000 times.
Sorry, everybody. So
no,
the,
you're not.
The next one here for my fine dining people that enjoy the pod, El Bulli. That's right.
Oh.
Yeah, El Bulli. El Bulli was a restaurant near the town of Roses, Catalonia, Spain, run by chef Ferran Adrià and driven by culinary ideas of Albert Adrià. The restaurant overlooked Cala Montoji, or Montoy?
Where is it?
Right here.
Montoy?
Montoy?
Because
I believe
J would be,
J would
like
be silent,
H.
right? Yeah. Montoy?
Montoy.
Or Montoy?
Montoy.
Yeah, Montoy. A bay on Catalonia's Costa Brava.
Costa.
Oh, yeah. Costa Brava. It held 3 Michelin stars and was described in a UK newspaper, The Guardian, as the most imaginative generator of haute cuisine on the planet. The restaurant was also associated with molecular gastronomy. El Bulli closed on July 30th, 2011, and was reopened as a creativity center in 2014.
Hmm.
All I have ever heard is stories about El Bulli.
Yeah.
Because the chef, he created the, what it was the, basically it is an olive shaped, like liquid ball that is olive oil. It's like an olive oil olive and like stuff like that. Just crazy stuff coming out of that. Mm-hmm. It was the number one restaurant in the world for many years. The story I always remember is Dave Chang. He got a reservation to El Bulli, and it was like a year or two in advance. And he said, he's like, I didn't have the money to actually go, but you have to make a reservation that early. Wow. And then you find a way to get there. Like, that's uh-huh. kind of how you do it. And so that's what he did. I think it closed because the one of the Adrias, the one that was basically the guy who made the olive oil olive thing, from my understanding, he wanted a different project to work on. And they were like, well, who's going to take over this then? Because I think the brother or the dad got too old to keep going. And so, yeah, that's from my loose understanding. But El Bulli, you talk to any old guard chefs type, what have you, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, El Bulli. Like, that was the pinnacle, right? Like, today it's Massimo Bottura and, you know, Noma and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But right upon that same level, probably, Emo's Pizza.
No, I've had this, and I can definitely say, no, it's not.
You sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I've never even been to a place as fancy as El Bulli, but no. This is not on the same tier.
Well, Simone Biles would disagree with you. She's an Olympian. She's been around the world, and she loves Emo's. So
okay, I like Emo's if it's not just cheese pizza.
Right.
Because they use the Provel.
I tried to warn you, and you didn't listen. You didn't.
I just...
You were like, I just want cheese.
Well,
like,
you know, it was the first time I've been to St. Louis, and I'm like, oh, there's all these things people say you got to try. And, you know, Provel cheese is one of those things. And so I was like, how bad can it be? It's cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say it's bad, but it's weird.
Yeah.
It's not like mozzarella.
No.
At all.
If it is like mozzarella, it's the wettest mozzarella you've ever had.
And yeah, I don't know what it was, but you know, I think we had like a sausage and olive pizza.
Yeah, it was like
something.
A combo type pizza,
and that was good.
Yeah,
that tasted really good, but just the cheese pizza was so weird.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's but like rich.
I think my favorite thing from Emo's was the tea wraps.
Yeah,
toasted wraps. Yeah, those were so good.
Yeah.
I did not know they've been around.
Yeah, 1964. Emo's Pizza. It's an American chain of pizza restaurants headquartered in St. Louis, Missouri. As of 2020, the company says it has more than 100 restaurants and stores in Missouri, Illinois, and Kansas. The chain was founded by Ed and Margie Emo in St. Louis in 1964.
Just 100.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there'd be more.
You know, I think it's because it is a particular taste, and it's not it's not super cheap, right? It's not.
No, it was pretty expensive when we
and
had
And it's thin crust. It's not a thicker crust, so you gotta
thin
crust.
Super crackery,
Yeah, flaky. Yeah. But the tea wraps, amazing. The Provel bites, I like those. Those are good. But yeah. Anytime I go to St. Louis, I gotta have some Emo's. At least one.
I would say you gotta at least try it.
Oh, totally. You can get it on Gold Belly, everybody.
Yeah.
So you can order
it. So you can freeze it and all that. But I remember, this is a side story. I remember we went to a Sam's Club, which I had never been to before. Yeah. Also, because that's not really out here.
She's a Costco gal.
It's Costco. Costco's out on the West Coast, mainly. But we went into one time with your aunt, and I was like, oh, this is pretty similar to Costco, la, la, la. And then we went into the, like, refrigerated section, and then I see, or you point out, I think, the Provel cheese. And I was like, oh, I could, you know, you can actually buy it? And you're like, oh, yeah. And then I look at it, and it's a brick of like ramen noodle shaped cheese.
Yeah, spiraled. Yeah.
And I'm like, what is this? Why is, what is this? Yeah. And yeah, it was, I don't know. It was just weird.
Yeah, when you see it like that, it's pretty mind blowing. You're just like, how do you, like, why would you make it like that? Like, how, what?
We're used to seeing cheese like yeah. in a brick or shredded right. or around yeah. whatever. But
imagine Justin Timberlake hair, ramen dry noodles. Like, that's what it looked like. Spiralized. Thing, like
this thick.
Yeah.
I'm like, who's yeah. using this butt?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Ugh. But that's the Sam's. You know, that's the Sam's Club way. Yeah. Oh. And I gotta tell you, Sam's Club does have a very cool thing, and my aunt used it, where you scan everything in your cart as you go, mm. and then you just walk out.
That was really cool.
That is legit.
I think Costco
needs totally to do have that. That. Yeah, they need
so
to do
many
that.
People all the time.
Oh yeah.
Just
yeah.
scan and then like you know pay it totally. At the end and go.
Well, and I think what I can't remember exactly how it was done, but I think my aunt, you know, the person who checks your receipt. Essentially, that same person just looks at your phone and looks at the list and then looks in your cart and is like, oh, okay. And they have your phone. So you're not going to like bolt after yeah. that. Right? Like you're not going to steal. So it's like they've got your phone. They scroll and they're like, okay, yeah, here you go. And then you are on your way. It's amazing. But anyways, great St. Louis trip. Thank you, Aunt Nancy.
Yeah.
And Granny. Yeah. But anyways, next one. Three Sisters Tavern. This one, back in my new home, Oregon. The Three Sisters Tavern, sometimes abridged as Three Sisters, and nicknamed Six Tits, was a gay bar and strip club in Portland, Oregon, U.S. The bar was founded in 1964 and began catering to Portland's gay community in 1997, following the deaths of the original owners. The business evolved into a strip club featuring an all-male review. Also frequented by women, sometimes for bachelorette parties, Three Sisters was considered a hub of Portland's nightlife before closing in 2004.
Oh, I was about to say.
Yep.
When Joel was yep. here, I'm like, yeah. why didn't we take yeah. him there?
Yeah.
And it's been closed for like, yeah. I don't know math, 18 years.
Yeah, 18. Yeah, years.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but, huh. but yeah. Kind of interesting.
Love the nickname.
Love the name. Yeah. Well, and it's
not
like
not demeaning at all.
Well, and it makes you think for like a split second of like why sick, and then it's like, oh, okay, you got to do math, you know.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because I was like, why six?
Right. Yeah. Why six?
Like how many people in that? Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It takes me a while to get on, like catch on to things.
Right.
Because I'm like constantly thinking, so
right,
yeah.
So yeah, but it doesn't take you long to catch on to Tim Hortons.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, commonly nicknamed Tim's or Timmy's, is a Canadian multinational coffee house and restaurant chain. I call it Timmy Ho's. That's what I call
it.
And
I tell him to stop.
I'm like, Timmy Ho's.
I tell him to stop calling it that because whenever we can go to Canada one day,
yeah.
If he says that, we'll probably get kicked out.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
I want to go so bad.
Yeah. But based in Toronto, Tim Hortons serves coffee, donuts, and other fast food items. It's Canada's largest quick service restaurant chain with 5,352 restaurants in 15 countries as of June 30th, 2022. The company was founded in 1964 in Hamilton, Ontario by Canadian hockey player Tim Horton and Jim Sherrod.
Like a real person, yeah. like a real name.
It's a dude yep. who used to play the hockeys. But yeah, after an initial venture in hamburger restaurants. So they
See?
Did that. And then,
See, I'm saying you got
yeah, to venture
There's
out.
There's enough hamburger places you yeah. need. You need to figure out something else.
Yep.
And they did.
In 1967, Horton partnered with investor Ron Joyce, who assumed control over operations after Horton died in 1974. Joyce expanded the chain into a multi-billion dollar franchise. Sherrod or Charade, I don't know if they pronounce it which way, but left the organization in 1966 and briefly returned in 1970 and 1993 through 1996.
He's like, kept... I need a couple decades off.
I need a couple decades off. On August 26th of 2014, Burger King agreed to purchase Tim Hortons for $11.4 billion. Wow. The two chains became subsidiaries of the Canadian-American holding company Restaurant Brands International, which is majority owned by Brazilian investment firm 3G Capital in 2014.
Huh.
That's a heck of like a chain of businesses to get to. But this is a place that Kaylee introduced me to coming up next. Togo's.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was 1964. Togo's.
Are they still in business?
They are. Okay. They are. It's few and far between.
Yeah, because we had this in Eugene.
We did. It was good.
Went to college there. It was really good.
And it wasn't too expensive.
No, it was just like, you know, any Jersey Mike's and whatever, Jimmy John's and all that.
The bigger sandwiches. That's what I remember. It was a little bit bigger than your average sandwich.
Yeah.
It's an American chain of fast casual sandwich restaurants owned by Southfield Mezzanine Capital, who purchased the company in March 2019. Togo's, or Togo's, is headquartered in San Jose, California. Togo's is a franchise-based business. Some Togo's locations are co-branded with Baskin-Robbins ice cream shops, which were both owned by the same parent company from 1997 to 2007. As of July 2020, the company has more than 180 locations open and under development throughout the West. In 1964, two students of Northern Michigan University, Tom Newman and Gordon Reed, opened the first Togo's in Marquette, Michigan. The origin of the name is twofold. The two co-founders combined parts of their names, the two from Tom and go from Gordon. Additionally, the original shop had no seating, so all of the orders were to go.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. Newman departed a year after the founding, and in 1966, Reed sold the business to Joseph Fountain. So, both of them. Newman departed a year after the founding, and then
which one is that, Tom or
Tom? And then Gordon
so
Reed.
Joe goes
right
or Joe's.
Well, Gordon, so Gore, so go.
I know, but the...
Togo's.
I'm not going to fight with you
Tom,
on this.
Togo's. Togo's. Sound like I'm, like, trying to play with Legos or something. But anyways, sorry, I had to adjust my seat. Anyways, the next one here, this one is an interesting one. So I'm going to get to it here in a second. I'm not going to change the image just yet. No, it's okay.
My head hurts, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, we always don't feel good when we record, guys. We do this for you.
No, that's not.
Listener.
No, I haven't had enough water, I think, so.
Yeah. We had a lot of caffeine today.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Bill Moon, a regional manager for Standard Oil, purchased the land and built the original truck stop in 1964 along the emerging I-80, the 3,000-mile highway that would directly connect San Francisco with New York. As they were building I-80, my father was responsible for finding land
building.
It's a person talking, ma'am. Jeez, my father was responsible for finding land and building truck stops for Standard Oil, says his daughter, Delia Meyer, or Dahlia. Delia?
Delia.
Yeah, Delia Meyer. Initially, a small white enamel building surrounded by cornfields, it housed a modest trucker store, one lube bay, so oil change bay, and a restaurant. Iowa 80. Yeah, it is the world's largest truck stop located along Interstate 80 off exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. And if you're on YouTube, you can see the image here. It is a massive truck stop.
It looks like a racetrack. Like
it does.
The size of a racetrack.
Yeah, that is a lot of concrete and asphalt, right? Like that is, I mean, it's just a lot. But it sits on a 220-acre plot of land 3 times larger than an average 75-acre truck stop. And it receives 5,000 visitors daily. Iowa 80 features a 67,000-square-foot main building, parking for 900 trucks, 15 diesel fuel pumps, and also has a dedicated pump for dispensing bulk diesel exhaust fluid. 450 employees staff the megaplex. Iowa 80 is currently affiliated with the Travel Centers of America chain, which I believe that's the TA, right? But yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's like crazy. I've never been to Iowa 80. I've been in Iowa before, but I've never been to Iowa 80. If somebody asked where's the largest truck stop in the world, I would have guessed
Texas.
Yeah, I would have guessed Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, or Missouri. Missouri is big on truck stops. Like, they want to have cool
also
truck
convenience
stops. Oh yeah,
stores.
Yeah.
QT.
That's
like a culture.
It is.
That's a cultural thing. Is I'm having telling you. These huge convenience stores.
Yeah.
And I know. It makes me sound weird for being fixated on it, but when we first went to one, I was absolutely floored with how much stuff they could fit into, like, you know, a convenience store, gas, you know, whatever. Yeah. I was just like, why do you have, like, a full hot dog spread? Why do you...
Taquitos.
Why
corn
do you
dogs.
Have, like... hundreds and hundreds of different drinks.
Yeah.
The soda fountain was...
It's at least 35 or 40 different fountain pumps.
And like, that was just
crazy.
That place.
Right.
So this place is probably like a factory.
Right.
Of all of the sodas and junk food you can think of. Yeah. And it's overwhelming.
The closest thing to a QT or a Casey's or Sheetz, apparently now, or a Bucky's, is that place that's next to Seven Feathers Casino.
That's connected to that casino,
right?
Though,
because like that's a bigger.
It's like a really big convenience store kind of thing, but there's also an area for like truckers to shower and clean up and all of that. But that's not like a major brand or that's connected to a casino.
Right.
But and these are like their own
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Casey's Pizza was legit good. I liked Casey's Pizza. That was like awesome. It was red brick, and I'm talking Casey, so Casey. They were all everywhere in Southwest Missouri. QT was there before, and then it went to Casey's. It was like a battle. I have no idea, but the main thing is that I remember when I went to the U of O in Eugene, there was a 7-Eleven down on the corner next to one of the places that we would go to eat. And I remember going into that 7-Eleven, and I'd been in 7-Elevens before, but then it's like I walked in there, and all I could think was, I wish there was a QT around here. Like, because it was like once you go to a QT, a 7-Eleven feels like a joke. It does.
Well,
it just is like, what is this?
It,
like,
it makes sense why these bigger...
Yeah.
Convenience pit stop places exist in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Is because there's so much room between one stop here and your final destination or whatever.
Yeah.
In more concentrated areas like Northeast or West Coast, more things are shoved closer together. So there's no need for it out here.
Right. Yeah. Everything's kind of bulked into little areas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your distance is not far.
Not near as far.
If you're going from Portland to Medford in Oregon, that's about 5 hours.
Right.
And that's the whole state. Like up to down that you're
right.
going to. So you shouldn't really need to stop at a big place like this if it's just 5 hours, yeah. you know.
Yeah. All I can say is growing up in the Midwest. Ducks. Oh, there's ducks outside.
Sorry, there's ducks outside. Oh, it's a boy and a girl.
But anyways, the main thing I was going to get to was that truck drivers of America out there, you guys deserve so, guys and gals and non-binary pals out there on the roads, they deserve so much more money than what they get. And even if they're like a private trucker and they make pretty good money, they still deserve a lot more money than what they get paid. That's all I'm going to say about that is because let me tell you, man, that is not an easy job. You're away from your family if you're doing long haul, all those kinds of things. And everybody knows that it's not a job where you get a ton of like physical activity. It's in short bursts. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, yeah, we gotta treat the people who get all of our goods, which includes health goods, by the way, to us. Yeah, just yep. everybody give a hand for the truckers out there. They do a wonderful job. But the next one here, we're passing the Iowa 80 because in one of their aisles, I am sure, they would have Pop-Tarts.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. This is from lovefood.com. People who fell in love with food in the 60s. Pop-Tarts are everything that's good about convenience food. Easy, tasty, with a long shelf life. And everything that's bad, sugary, processed, and nutrient poor. Yeah. But since Kellogg's introduced the product in 1964, it has been a roaring success in the U.S. and other countries such as Canada and the U.K.
Yeah, they're not, like, they shouldn't be a thing.
Probably not.
Because they don't do anything beneficial for humans except make us happy. My favorite flavors.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I knew you would.
Yeah.
My favorite flavor, I'll say my top three.
Okay.
And I won't say I've had, like, all of them or anything. Right. I haven't.
It's so hard to have
because there's so many.
Yeah.
But at least, like, the common ones that are... were my favorites. I haven't had Pop-Tarts in so long, but frosted strawberry. The unfrosted, those shouldn't exist either, because if you're already going to put this much sugar in. But frosted strawberry, brown sugar, and cinnamon.
Oh, those are your top two.
I have three.
Oh, you have top three. Okay.
Cookies and cream.
Oh, you're a cookies and cream gal. Wow.
Love it.
Oh,
I absolutely love those.
So.
And I never ate them toasted. I didn't like them toasted compared to just.
I'm not kidding. Until junior high, I did not know that people toasted them. I thought everybody just opened the package and you eat them. Like, that's what I thought it was.
Well, and I've had it both ways, and, you know, it is kind of nice toasted, but I just always ate them, like, as is.
Straight up, yeah. My favorites, no particular order, just because I would kind of change them up here and there. Mm-hmm. Strawberry, frosted strawberry. You got to have frosted strawberry. Yeah, that's like the OG. It looks like Funfetti. Remember, I'm a huge S for Funfetti. And then the one that, like, was a 90s mainstay was Wild Berry.
Yeah, it's like...
It's like the one in the middle on this picture.
Yeah.
It's got the, you know,
artificial
neon
blue and purple.
Yeah, and purple. I love that one. And then if I had to pick a third, I'm going s'mores, baby. I loved the s'mores Pop-Tarts.
No, that one... that one's probably fourth.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. Really good.
Yeah.
Very sugary, very good.
Yeah. And then I would stray into cookies and cream every now and again. And then the brown sugar. It seemed like schools had brown sugar a lot. Like, it was always available. And then they had an apple one. I'm trying to remember. It was like a green apple or apple pie, maybe. I can't remember. But I liked the apple one a lot as well. I think they tried to make it like caramel apple, maybe. I can't remember, but apple
but
one
they're
was
like
good.
Dessert.
They are.
And
yeah. Pure dessert. And it's like, here's your breakfast. And
yeah,
it's like,
but
oh my God.
It was a breakfast staple.
Yeah. Yeah. So the next one from Love Food, diet sodas. Before there was Diet Coke, there was Coca-Cola's Tab. And to rival Tab, there was Diet Pepsi, which became available in 1964. And unlike Tab, it is still sold worldwide. The soda faced criticism in 2015 when the controversial sweetener aspartame was replaced with sucralose. And many fans said the taste had changed.
I hate Pepsi.
I knew that's why I married you. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Pepsi.
I hate Pepsi.
And Eugene, Oregon is a Pepsi town.
Pepsi town.
And oh man, I hate it. Oh, I do not like it.
I freaking hate Pepsi. It's gross. It is so gross.
Yeah.
The Coke brand of, and right. I know, just a couple episodes ago, I was like, I don't really like soda, because I don't. But just based off of everything I've had in the past and what I drink once in a while still, the Coke brand of sodas is 1,000,000,000,000,000 times better than the Pepsi brand. Like Sierra Mist is the nastiest lemon lime soda.
Yep.
Disgusting. And it's part of PepsiCo.
Right.
Okay.
But I think with PepsiCo, a lot of Mountain Dew is with PepsiCo, which people, huge contractors, you know, what have you with the Mountain Dew.
I will say I had a weakness. I worked at Panera. Sorry, I keep falling out of this chair. It's really annoying. I had a weakness for Mountain Dew at one point in my life.
Everybody does.
Like
eventually.
I didn't even really drink it growing up or anything. But when I worked at Panera, I got, you know, free soda fountain drinks.
Yeah.
And I worked the early shift, so it was like 5 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And I would be so tired. And I was still in college, and I was like hooked on Mountain Dew for like a month or two.
Yeah.
But PepsiCo is garbage.
Yeah.
And they can't do anything about it.
Yeah. As everybody should know, if you know me, Baja Blast. I love Baja Blast. I don't know how to put it. Like, I think when somebody asked me one time, what does it taste like? I said, it tastes like the gasoline that goes into the generators that power trailer parks. I think that's what I said. And I stick by that. Like, it is like, it you shouldn't like it. But you do.
No.
You drink it
and
you go,
I force you to not seek it.
I know.
You try to look for it in stores.
Oh,
man. You need to stop.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think that's a sign from beyond, because I think it was last year.
Yeah.
They had it at Target.
Oh, man.
And I went to go pick it up for you because I was like, I'll be a good wife. And I bought it. But it was in the bottom part of the cart.
We got like two or three cases of it, and it was in the bottom of the cart, and we left it in the bottom of the cart. We get all the way home, and I'm like, oh, we gotta get the Baja Blast. We gotta get it so we can put it in the fridge.
And my sister Marissa was with us because she was visiting during her summer break, and I was like, Marissa, do you remember? She's like, no, and I'm like, I don't remember. And then I was like, we left it in the bottom of the cart. No one noticed.
Somebody in the parking lot got three cases of Mountain Dew Baja Blast for free, basically, if they found them in time.
So with that story said, that's a sign.
Yeah, it was
to not consume it.
I got to move on before I get too sad. The next one here, which I think everybody can enjoy. This isn't like the hatred of Pepsi and Coke.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. This cereal of toasted oat pieces and multicolored marshmallow moons, stars, clovers, and hearts proved irresistible to kids.
Nice.
It was launched in 1964, Lucky Charms. The brand still carries Lucky, its leprechaun mascot, who has brought the brand good fortune. In 2018, it was General Mills' fastest growing cereal brand.
Yeah. It's good.
I love me some Lucky
Charms.
Again,
it's one of those things that is not nutritious at all.
Right.
And you really shouldn't eat it that often.
But it's so
But it's one of my favorite cereals that I've had.
And it, like I said, I think a sign of a good cereal, I think we've discussed this either personally or on the show before, a good cereal leaves a flavor and a good flavor in the milk afterwards.
Yeah.
And Lucky Charms makes good after cereal milk. It does.
I'd say the best is Cinnamon Toast Crunch or like Cocoa Puffs.
Right.
But yeah,
those
Lucky
two are
Charms
high.
Is up there.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lucky Charms is up there. It's pretty good.
Oh.
Oh, the ducks.
Okay. There's two females and a male duck.
Ooh, are they fighting?
I don't know.
Oh, no.
I don't know where this third duck came from.
I don't know where this third duck came from, guys. This is a rogue duck.
There might be some drama going on in our little creek.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
He the male duck, he had two,
yeah,
two female ducks, and then they found out about each other.
He's like,
I don't get out much.
That happens.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Everyone I know is near and far.
So yeah. Yeah.
Far.
Yeah, pretty far.
They're far.
But thankfully, we have another reference for foodreference.com. We're going to run through these because these are always fun. St. Paul, Minnesota gets its first McDonald's restaurant and burgers are 15 cents. Yeah, wow. 1964. And then Baskin-Robbins introduces Beetle Nut ice cream as the Beatles land at JFK Airport in New York for their first U.S. tour. Yeah, and that banner, if you're on YouTube, everybody, it is the Beatles around a two-scoop ice cream. Yeah. Yeah.
That's one of the worst names.
I know, Beetle Nut. Beetle Nut ice cream. Like, man, oh, man.
There's a lot of reasons why that's a bad name.
Yeah, yeah. But the next one here, Pepsi acquires the Tip Corporation, which includes the rights to Mountain Dew soft drink. Yep. Gotta have that Mountain Dew. Anyways, Boyd Coffee Company registered Flavor Flow trademark for coffee making equipment. Flavor Flow was a big thing back in the 60s. But anyways, the next one here, a very famous individual, Robert William Flay was born. Bobby Flay. Yeah, celebrity chef, restaurateur, and cookbook author, host of numerous TV cooking shows. When I was younger, I was not a huge fan of Bobby Flay. It wasn't that I disliked him, really. It just, there wasn't anything I liked about him. A lot of people think he's very cheesy, what have you. Ever since he started coming on CBS Sunday Morning, I kind of enjoy when he does his little monologues or segments. He's not on all the time.
I
but
don't.
Every now and again. He's got two Maine Coons now. One is Nacho.
I don't care for him.
Yeah. Kaylee doesn't care.
I'm bringing the mic closer. I don't care for Bobby Flay.
I think it's because he's a redhead.
No, that's not it. He's done some stuff in his personal life that I know you shouldn't judge people, but I'm judging.
Yeah. So. Well, and he's apologized. That doesn't mean it takes the thing away, but he has apologized. I don't know.
And I don't know.
I just like that he has cats. He's got two Maine
Coons. I like
his
cats. That's it.
Nacho, and I can't remember
Nacho
the other one.
Nacho and Stella?
Stella. But anyways, the next one here, a big thing, like massive thing. The Food Stamp Act of 1964 creates a permanent food stamp program. I still remember when my mom had little, like, paper...
The booklets.
Right. It was a booklet, and it had little stamps in it. And everybody has this stigma with food stamps and, like, having it. You had the Oregon Trail card. I remember that when you were in college.
I had to.
They helped out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I tell you what, without SNAP and food stamps, there are so many families and children and even college kids that could have gone pretty dang hungry without those. And so the SNAP, or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, very great. It's an amazing thing.
Grandma had them for a long time because she was widowed in the 90s. And so she just had like her Social Security and I'm assuming money from my grandpa's death and still needed food stamps. So it's how some people have to survive. So it's very necessary. And it's not just something for people to buy steaks and candy, you know, whatever that argument is.
Right,
it's how people can not starve to death.
Well,
in a time of need. So.
Well, and some folks, they try to bring up the whole like, oh, they're buying lobster or frozen pizzas or and it's like, one, people should be able.
I wasn't buying lobster. I was going to
say,
for sure.
Yeah. I was going to say, most of the time, even if they are, that is something they're probably celebrating with. Yeah. And you're telling me people don't deserve to celebrate something.
Right.
I don't know. It's an amazing program. It's actually helped and saved probably a ton of people. And a lot of people just think that it's like, I don't know, some type of like tax thing thrown and you're just burning money. No, it's helping people. Like a lot of people. So
I would just hope I would just hope that if people out there are critical or have issues with something like this, that they never have been in a situation that would require additional assistance like this, or that they don't end up in a situation like this in the future.
Right.
Because I think a lot of it just has to do with empathy.
Yeah.
Trying to envision yourself in someone else's shoes. You know, and I think a lot of, not to get too serious, but I think a lot of people lack that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's just kind of like, okay, well, it's kind of like, in a weird example, like people who have never worked in like retail or food dining setting,
customer service.
Yeah. And then they like, some of them, not all people who haven't worked in a field like that are rude or bad or whatever, but there's also a lot who are and treat people like garbage. I think everybody should work in a field like that.
Yeah.
Because they'll learn a lot.
Right.
And I think they'll learn a lot about how to treat people and.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I know people who have utilized this program. I did at one point too.
Yeah. The thing that I do not know who said it, so I'm sorry I can't give these people credit, but it was stop thinking with your hardworking hands because your emotions and what you're saying is very off the cuff, but you need to start imagining with your feet and being in someone else's shoes. That's the way it should be. I think that anytime somebody says they need assistance or they've gotten assistance or things like that, that means that they didn't have to struggle with something as simple as food that we should all be able to have in the society that we have today. So
yeah, you just hope if you've ever struggled or if you've ever had a hard time in your life that people would treat you with decency. Treat others how you want to be treated.
Totally. So. Yeah. And the next one here, in 1964, the 12-ounce aluminum can was introduced by Royal Crown Cola. And everybody's probably wondering, like, 12-ounce can, isn't that like every can soda is 12? Yeah, they were the first ones to do it. 12-ounce can, and it wasn't until 3 years... Oh, I went to the next image. It wasn't until 3 years later that Coke started using aluminum cans.
I'm assuming it was all glass bottles.
Before. Right. Okay. Yeah, glass bottles, or they did... I think it was like containers. They did like kind of like milk jugs type of, but it wasn't carbonated. It wasn't carbonated stuff. It was, yeah. But yeah, the next one here that I think I showed everybody too early, the world's largest cheese was made. It was a 34,591 pound cheddar. It was created by the Wisconsin Cheese Foundation for the 1964-65 New York World's Fair. Yeah, it took 170,000 quarts of milk from 16,000 cows. It was it was eaten at the 1965 annual meeting of the Wisconsin Dairymen and Cheesemakers Association.
This is cheddar?
Let me see. Yeah, cheddar. Yeah, cheddar. Yeah.
I love cheddar, so I'd have a good time with this.
Mac and cheese. I just have mac and cheese.
Just like cheddar. Yeah.
Cheddar anything.
Like cubes or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't, I know I'm weird, but I don't really like eating cheese on its own.
Yeah.
Like I always have to have it with something.
With something.
But cheese cubes, cheddar cheese cubes.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
So this whole thing of cheese is like calling my name.
Yeah. It was eaten at the 1965 annual meeting of the Wisconsin Dairymen and Cheesemakers Association. A replica is on display in Nielsville, Wisconsin.
Now, if this was white cheddar, I would have like a blowtorch whatever and then melt it.
Melt it as you go.
So that you could put a bunch of pasta in it and it would be like
perfect
white cheddar mac and cheese.
Right.
Side note, the, what's that brand? It's the Bunny? Annie's?
Oh, Annie's, yeah.
The Annie's white cheddar mac and cheese.
It's good.
So good.
It is. Yeah. Oh, man. But anyways, 1964. Cheese. Yeah, cheese. plastic milk container introduced commercially. Oh. Yeah, so that's where we get the jugs.
Ooh.
Plastic milk jugs.
I don't know. I find something very quaint and charming about the glass.
Yeah.
Like the milk in the glass jugs, and you have a milkman, you know, brings your jugs.
Moving on.
That's not what
I
mean.
Gosh.
That's not what I mean.
Kaylee.
What?
Oh my gosh.
And then, you know, you give them your empty jugs to reuse.
It was very recyclable.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it was a good.
That's what I mean, not because of a milkman. It could be a milk woman or a milk they. Milk they.
Anyways,
you're
the
so
next one here.
Accusatory.
No, I'm just, we have our furry sons in the room. Please. Oh, there's one of them. Little Biscuit.
Oh, he went
got
back
up.
Down.
Yeah,
okay.
He went back down. But next here, the person that wanted all plastic milk containers to go away, Rachel Louise Carson.
Mm-hmm.
She passed away in 1964, an American biologist and author of Silent Spring, about environmental pollution, especially the dangers of DDT.
Her work and her life just really kick-started a lot of what happened with environmental protections and awareness in subsequent decades. So she's like the kickstart of all that kind of stuff. So she's very important in history.
Yeah. Worldwide, I'm not sure who the first person was that was kind of like the environmentalist, you know, type of person, because I know we're very like Americanized. And we're like, Rachel was the first environmentalist. But it's like,
I mean,
you know,
but she was like the first
for
the, big
For the name. American movement, of that. And what I would say with the Silent Spring stuff is that, she kind of found and studied and did all the things with the DDT stuff. And I think some people look back at it and are like, it seems so obvious that these sprays and stuff like that wouldn't be good for what we're doing. And it's like,
we're still having issues now.
Exactly. Yeah, it wasn't that obvious. And she was the person that basically was like, you know, yeah, the book's called Silent Spring, but like, guys, this could be a silent killer. Like, this is something that the human body, other animals' bodies can't break down. And this is something that could be really bad for us. And really, it made it to where we actually pay attention to what's going into the water and, you know, the air and all the stuff that we need to survive. So, yeah. And then some people say that they have to survive off of KFC, but not Colonel Harlan Sanders. Colonel Harlan Sanders sells his KFC chicken restaurant chain. Yeah, but remains as a spokesman for the company. Hmm. Yeah. And then this is a person that Kaylee's probably going to crack up and almost pass out from laughing. Bobby Chin was born. Chef, restaurateur, author, and TV cooking show host.
Honestly, he's serving looks right now. He is. I'm here for it.
He has restaurants in Vietnam.
Is this why I'm going to laugh?
I thought you were going to laugh because of his face.
No, I'm jealous. I wish I could look that good.
Yeah, I literally there's so many other pictures of this guy, and I found that one and I was like, perfect.
I don't know, have we talked on here before? I don't know, but he I say this a lot with people who have like a lot of confidence or energy. He f's.
Yeah. But he had Discovery Network TV shows, World Cafe Asia, and Bobby Chin Cooks Asia. So yeah, Bobby Chin. And then Kaylee's.
Was that too far of me to?
No.
To say? I mean.
No. This is one of Kaylee's favorite celebrity chefs, Robert Irvine.
No, he's not.
Was born.
Stop lying.
British celebrity chef.
He's British?
Yeah, he's British. Food Network shows include Dinner Impossible, Worst Cooks in America, and Restaurant Impossible. Do you want to tell the story or me?
Well, if I miss parts, you can... Because sometimes, I don't know, I'm hoping nothing's wrong with me, but my memory is not great sometimes. Like, I miss a lot of key things.
Yeah.
But I don't know why, but we were watching, was it Restaurant Impossible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we were watching an episode of that just to see what it was like. And it was this couple who owned a restaurant and it wasn't doing well for various reasons. And one of them or both of them liked singing or something.
The wife, I believe.
Because she sang at their church or something.
Right.
So, and also this couple had like a rocky relationship. And
because
I think,
of the restaurant.
Yeah.
The restaurant wasn't doing well.
Yeah,
they disagreed.
I think that was like the main
stuff.
Thing, but there might have been some other issues. But one of the ways that Robert or the producers of the show, whoever, thought they could reconcile this couple and make things better for them was to set up some time in a recording studio and make songs.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if Robert joined in on it or if he was doing like weird dances or something, but
he was like
so weird.
Yeah, it was the weirdest.
I have never seen anything like that on a food show.
Yeah. I can't remember if it was barbecue, a fried chicken, or soul food. I'm trying to remember. It was in the South, though, and it was an African-American couple, and the wife sang in her church. The husband was like, he was at the restaurant, but apparently he was very aloof. Like he was always on his phone, stuff like that. And they have a discussion outside of the restaurant and Robert's like freaking out. He's like, we're never going to finish this restaurant if you two are still arguing all the time about that. And it was like, oh my God. And the husband said, while he's putting his phone away, well, I loved my wife. And in the wife, the wife goes, loved? She's like, I'm done. Bye.
How
and
can
she,
I forget that? I reference that all the time.
Yeah.
So, like, I reference a lot of things. I don't remember where they come from. But that was one of the key key elements of that episode that I loved. Because this man made the choice to say it in the past tense.
Yeah.
And she, like, lost it.
Man. Yeah.
I'm done. Bye.
And she just grabbed her bag, her purse, whatever, and she walked away. And then Robert was like, what does your wife love to do more than anything? And he's like, well, she sings at her church. And he's like, well, you guys need to get together and you need to rekindle that fire and da da da. So that, yeah, they go to like a recording studio and they're singing like R&B, like R&B, jazzy type music. And Robert is in the sound studio and he's like, you know, bobbing his head and he's singing and dance. And there's like a whole 3 minute segment of them singing this song on a episode of Restaurant Impossible. I had never seen a show that was supposed to be something else just go swerving off on that exit and just like, wow. Like,
I get that pretty much all reality TV shows, even if it's cooking or food or whatever, are scripted.
Yeah.
But I just, I was not expecting this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was not expecting this. And I was like, we're not watching this again.
It's crazy.
And we have not seen it since.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen it ever since.
I said, I'm done. Bye. And I haven't watched it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Robert Irvine's been in trouble. And he's on, like,
protein bars? Or something?
Yeah, yeah, he's on a lot of men's magazines because he's over 50, but he looks like a bodybuilder, and he's married or he's dating a WWE wrestler.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And yeah, yeah, and he got in trouble because there was something on his resume that was a lie, and all sorts of stuff. Robert Irvine is probably a very nice dude.
You know, I will say I dislike him more than Bobby.
Oh wow.
So, Bobby, if you're hearing this,
woo.
You got that.
Dang.
I don't like either of them.
Oh.
So.
Well, I'll move on.
And I know I was just talking about, like, empathy and trying to...
Yeah, be kind to people.
I am a bit of a hypocrite, I'll admit it, but there are certain things where it's like it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like the two things we were talking about are separate. Like.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
I will say, by the way, and I'm sorry to keep aciding on this, but the R&B jazzy song was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's not that I'm making fun of the couple.
No,
exactly.
No, 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 no.
Yeah, because the couple's just like, hey, we're trying to fix our relationship. But at the same time, it's like I was watching Restaurant Impossible.
You don't see that on like Gordon Ramsay shows or anything else, really.
I mean, and like I said, it took up over half the episode. It was crazy. Yeah. Oh, man. But the next one here, Belgian waffles.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's right. Remember the Belgian waffles served at the New York World's Fair in 1964 and 1965? Thick, chewy, hot, and delicious. Who knew waffles could be the perfect dessert?
Or breakfast.
Yeah, or breakfast, but not perfect because pancakes are better.
No, that's not true.
On Food Timeline.
You're wrong. You're wrong.
No, I don't think
you're
so.
You're wrong. Look at those and tell me pancakes are better.
Pancakes are better.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
You're lying because you're being paid by Big Pancake.
Big Pancake. Who's Big Pancake? Is that the IHOP?
It's like, the Illuminati.
Yeah, it's the IHOP mob. Yeah. But anyways, Food Timeline, Carnation Instant Breakfast. Have you ever had this?
I haven't. I've seen it and I've heard of it, but I've never had it.
I've had it. It's not awful, but it is not a full breakfast. That's all I can say. Carnation Company announced a product that it said provides the nutrients of a conventional breakfast when dissolved in a glass of whole milk. The product Instant Breakfast will be introduced in 8 Western states, the company said. And that was from Carnation's Instant Breakfast in the Wall Street Journal, August 4th, 1964. So yeah, Carnation Instant Breakfast came in coffee, chocolate, or plain box of 6.
Plain?
Yeah, for 69 cents.
Wow.
Yeah. Another one from Food Timeline, Chick-fil-A. registered. Oh, yeah.
US, that old, huh?
Yeah. The records of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office confirmed Chick-fil-A brand foods were introduced to the American public June 27th, 1964. And then the next one here, Kaylee's favorite hatred of food, ants on a log.
Ugh.
That's right. The classic American recipe for ants on a log calls for celery, peanut butter, and raisins. Ants on a log and other buggy recipes. Some recipe variations substitute cream cheese. Whoa, on celery?
That's disgusting. Ooh. I was just about to say, at least the peanut butter and raisins make the celery edible.
That's the whole reason.
That is.
Yeah.
That is. Yeah. But if you put cream, that makes me like sick thinking about it.
Or a commercial cheese spread.
Ew.
So like cheese in a can.
That's disgusting.
Who invented ants on a log and when?
I don't know, but I don't like them. They're excellent
questions. Celery and raisins were eaten, but not necessarily together, by people living in ancient times. Peanut butter was invented at the very end of the 19th century. Each of these foods, alone or combined, are considered healthy. Celery, raisin, and nut salads were brought to our country from Germany. These were very popular in the late 19th century, the famous Waldorf salad. They were mixed with mayonnaise. Small, bite-sized stuffed vegetables became very popular in America at the same time. Stuffing was usually some type of cheese, but could also be anchovy paste and other exotic fillings. You will find more details in the America Century Cookbook by Gene Anderson. From 1997, Dr. George Washington Carver combined peanuts and celery in the 1940s, though his recipes were limited to soup and salad. And so they don't.
My man, why'd you do that?
I know.
Why'd you do that?
Well, and that's the thing. This little tiny tidbit, it kind of gets down to where it all combined, but we still don't know who made ants on a log. If I had to bet, it was probably like a grandma or a mom who was making lunch for some kid and was just like,
well, this is from the era of, we're going to put all these vegetables and stuff in a Jell-O.
Yeah.
So they're like, let's just throw stuff on here and see if it's good enough.
Let's see if it's palatable. Not good,
but if it's edible.
Yeah, yeah. But next time on A Plate in Time, we will be in 1971.
Yeah. Is this the first time 70s has been done?
This is. This is the first time. 70s.
That'll be cool.
Time of disco. Yeah. So 1971. It'll be great. Kaylee, thank you for joining me in 1964.
Thank you.
It seems like you really got a lot out of this episode.
I did. I got a lot of unresolved feelings brought up.
Yeah. Whether it was Restaurant Impossible about people or
food,
truck stops. Yeah. A lot of issues that plagued you in this time period.
Just a lot of observations and like experiences were brought up. So.
Yeah.
And then here's my leg.
Yep. Yep. Provel cheese. That was another one. Yeah. Gotcha. Arby's, that was another one. Then the hibachi, this is a very year.
It was,
Maybe
that's why I have like an interest in this time period, because I think I knew of pretty much everything on here.
Yeah,
I had heard of it or experienced it at one point. So,
Big year for the old US of A and a lot of other places.
Yeah,
but yeah. We will see everybody next time on A Plate in Time in 1971 as we are departing from 1964. Thanks again to Kaylee and our cats joining in. Yeah, little guys. And we will see everybody next time.
Bye.
Goodbye. This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.